தெருவன் சன்னாய். This is yet another episode of the Dharma by English sermon program, and we are getting started just now, streaming live via YouTube, so that people around the world can join us and listen to the Lord Buddha's teaching. His Dhamma that helps us all to cross the ocean of samsara. The reason we do these programs in English is so that, or at least make an effort to do so whenever we have the opportunity, is so that we can share the message of the Lord Buddha with a greater population than just the native Sinhala speaking population. We have been streaming the Sinhala programs for quite a while now. These programs are also available via the YouTube channel Dharma Obai. But we appreciate that in comparison to the Sinhala speaking population, the English speakers around the world are immensely large. So this effort is to benefit those listeners and to help them receive the Lord Buddha's message, understand it, and to help them put an end to this suffering permanently. So we get together again on a Sunday afternoon, as we normally do. And before we get started, let us reflect on the fact that it is because of the Blessed One, the Lord Buddha, that we have this Dhamma today. It is because He took upon Himself the incredibly arduous and difficult job. The greatest job there is, the hardest job there is, the most difficult job there is, of becoming a Supreme Buddha, because it requires understanding the Dhamma by oneself. You have no teacher, you have no master. You contemplate, you reflect on the way the world is, you reflect and you analyze on how the world operates, how your mind operates. You try and analyze your thoughts, your feelings, and compare that with what could possibly be the universal truth, that is the Dhamma, in search of the Dhamma and in search of the truth. The Bodhisattva always spent his expedition in samsara looking for the truth, looking for how he can rid and eradicate the defilements that arose in his mind. And then one day, under the Bodhi tree, he found that process. He found the way to do that, and he found the way to liberate himself from the shackles of samsara, from the shackles of raga, that is desire, dvesha, that is aversion, and moha, that is delusion. And when he had completely eradicated attachment, tanha, and ignorance, avidya, at that moment in time, he knew everything. He could understand everything there is to understand, from the tiniest grain of sand, how the tiniest atom, molecule in the universe works, to the entire universe itself. But most of all, he understood himself. He understood all beings, he understood man, he understood devas and brahmas, and how people in and how beings in the hells suffer infinitely. He understood what the problem was. He understood what the cause for that problem was. He understood how to put a stop to that problem. And he understood what the steps are to putting a stop to that problem. And thus, he became enlightened. The next 45 years of his life, he dedicated to sharing all sentient beings, such that they may all listen to this Dhamma initially, as it requires an infinitely long time and extremely hard work, which he himself did for many millions of years, for many, many eons. And he realized that not all beings have the capacity, the time, the energy, and the patience to do that. And even if they did, for all that time, you continue to burn in this fire of samsara. And that is why he gave the Dhamma to us, such that we may learn from him, we may not make the same mistakes that he had done as a bodhisattva, when he was trying out various different things, various different ways to try and achieve liberation. He did go to very many teachers, every teacher there was, every popular teacher there was, that taught the way that they thought was the path to liberation. He went to all of them, and then he realized none of those methods actually work, not to do what he wanted to do. So he realized to just let beings go about finding their own path is an incredibly hard and arduous thing to do. So in his infinite compassion, he dedicated the next 45 years of his life to share the message, to share what he had found. And this is why we need to be mindful, and we should be grateful that it is the Lord Buddha that gave us this key to unlock ourselves from the prison of samsara. And therefore, before we commence, let us reflect on his infinite qualities, on his infinite kindness and his compassion. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. After having attained Buddhahood, he spent a number of weeks doing various things. The first week he spent reflecting on all of those beings who had helped him, all humans, all devas, all brahmas who had helped him, who had supported him, people and beings who would have been his parents, his friends, his brothers, sisters, sometimes just acquaintances, and maybe sometimes people who had just walked past him on the road but perhaps saved him from some kind of danger. Anyone and everyone that had supported him, he reflected upon. And his message there, the example that he set for us, was this is exactly what you should be doing as well. This is why before we start a sermon, we always give the opportunity to those who we have come past in samsara, beings who may today be either humans, devas or brahmas, and sometimes beings who may not be as fortunate to be born in the blissful planes, but those who are able to rejoice in the merits that are done by others. But of course, to do that, they must be able to witness those merits being done, those meritorious acts being done. And this is why we extend an invitation out to them to join us, and we make a wish and we make a determination that may they be able to listen to this Dhamma wherever they may be, may they be able to bear this Dhamma, and may they be able to comprehend, understand this Dhamma in a way that it helps them to both gain the merits as well as use the teaching to put a stop to rebirth, which is the fundamental problem that Buddhism tries to solve. So, as I make this invitation out to the Devas, the Brahmas, any beings who are in the vicinity who may be able to listen to this, realize that there's a sermon that is going on in some part of the world, and have the good fortune to join us, may they all join us. Let us also extend the invitation out to all those beings who we may have come past in sansara, those beings who we may have been of disservice to, those beings who we may have been unkind to and not been generous to, who we may have enjoyed the charity of but not having done anything in return to. It is time to pay those debts. It is time to show them that gratitude and that kindness that they have once showed us by offering them the greatest gift there is, and that is the gift of Dhamma. The gift of Dhamma is what helps us and better Brahmas, but not just stop there. Cross that barrier as well and find a way to stop existence once and for all. So, as I make this invitation, please join me in extending that invitation now to all of those Devas and Brahmas that may be around you, or those who may have been of some kind of support or who may have some kind of connection with you, as well as all of your past and distant relations, relatives who you may have come past in this infinitely long time in sansara, those beings who are in search of people that are doing meritorious deeds, good deeds, such that they can connect and rejoice in the merits that are being done, so that they can then use those merits to be born in better places and then understand the Dhamma and then find their own liberation. So I shall now make that invitation. Please join me in extending that invitation now to everyone.
Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasansa sunantu sagga mokkadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta.
For all of you that are listening to this Dhamma, I would like you to make a firm determination that this Dhamma comes of support to you, comes at a time when you are looking to unblock those barriers, or to jump over those barriers, unlock those doors that are standing between you and realizing Nibbana, that are standing between you, those closed doors that are stopping you from seeing the truth, seeing reality. Those of you who are trying to unveil the truth, move the curtains of delusion away so you can see the world clearly in all its light and all its glamour and glory. Make a determination that this Dhamma helps you do that, to cross the barrier of ignorance and get to the truth and realize the Four Noble Truths just as they are. And when you do so, remind yourselves that sometimes the reason that we are unable to understand the Dhamma, even when it's available to us and there is plenty of Dhamma in this day and age, is because we have, in our time in Sansara, insulted Aryans, noble people. These are those beings who have understood the Dhamma to some extent or fully. There could be Samma Sambuddhas, Pacheka Buddhas, Arahants, Anagamis, Sakurdagamis and Sotapannas, as well as anyone who is making an effort to become a Sotapanna. We may have insulted them in our ignorance, and having been unkind to them, today when we try to understand the Dhamma, the karmic energy that we released into the universe at a time when we did that comes to bite us in the back. It comes to us to block our understanding of the Dhamma. So there is only one way that we can relieve ourselves from that unfortunate series of events and sequences, and that is by seeking forgiveness from those noble people, from those Aryans, by making a firm determination that by reflecting on the fact that it is at a time when I was ignorant, it is at a time when I was delusional that I insulted those Aryans, that I was unkind to them. But today I can listen to the Dhamma, I understand the Dhamma and realize the errors in my ways, and I seek your forgiveness. I very humbly seek your forgiveness and may I be forgiven, may I be forgiven, may I be forgiven. May I be able to understand the Dhamma today, and may I be able to put an end to the samsaric problem of rebirth. So please take a moment to make that determination, as well as to make a firm determination that may today be the day that you are able to understand the Dhamma and cross the ocean of samsara by eradicating delusion and attachment that exists in our minds. Okay. A couple of weeks back, we talked about how the mind works when it receives a particular kind of input from the five senses. We talked about, I think that was the sermon we titled Ferrari in a Pentagon. The example there being a man walks into a car showroom looking for a particular kind of car, has an idea of the kind of car that he wants, he has expectations on what he's looking for, clearly, and then what happens when those expectations are met, or when they are not met, and therefore how that works with the models that exist within his mind. So what I'd like to do today is to actually try and discuss a little bit more around that. There were some questions around some of those topics, and there was a request to try and simplify that, the concept that was given there, a little bit more, as well as to try and show the difference between how that works in someone that is not an arahant, as well as and compare that with the mind of an arahant. How does the two work? Because ultimately, if our mind is the same, if our mind works in the same way that it does with an arahant, then obviously that is where we are. The difference between someone that is a trainee, I'll use the word trainee because they're training to be an arahant, they're practicing the path. Someone who's a trainee and someone who has been trained, or that is an arahant, is that it's not a difference in the body, it's not a difference in the physical form, but it's in the mind, it's in the way that the mind responds to the world. And that's all there is. Fortunately, you don't need to look better. You don't need to work on your looks to become an arahant. The only thing you need to try and fix is the way you view the world and the way you interact with the world. That's easier than trying to change how your body works and how it looks and so forth. If we reflect back on some of the concepts that we discussed that day, as well as try and understand how this concept of karma and vipaka works, deeds and their results, then that gives us a way to re-enter this topic. Now, what we do know is that an arahant does not commit karmas, so an arahant does not do deeds as such which accumulate karmas. As an example, as we know, preaching the Dhamma is meritorious, so that is done as a, well, when you and I preach that Dhamma, we accumulate merits, so that's ping, and we accumulate karmas. Clearly, because it's a good karma, a wholesome deed done, and then there are the merits that are due for that deed. When an arahant preaches the Dhamma, and clearly that was done, there was quite a bit of that. Let's not be fooled that the Lord Buddha himself was an arahant, and if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have any of this Dhamma. So when he preached the Dhamma, he didn't acquire merits as a result. There was no ping. He didn't do any bad things either. There was no unwholesome karma, so there were no ping and pau being the singular terms for merits and unmeritorious, so unmeritorious deeds and unmeritorious deeds respectively. So he didn't do any of that, and an arahant doesn't either, because merits are accumulated in the process of manipulating your mind, your thoughts, your words, as in speech, and your actions, to conduct and perform the 10 meritorious deeds as well as the 10 unwholesome deeds. When either of these two are done, and that is what most people do and do that all of the time, they either accumulate merits or sins. And the Buddha does not do that, and an arahant doesn't do that either. What they do have are what are called resultant deeds. They are called kriya. And if some of you have been studying Abhidhamma, you will see in the Abhidhamma Pitaka that there are these things called functional thoughts, which do not perform the action of generating karma. They are simply functional. They just do a function. So either when an arahant might give a dana, so there are stories in the past in history where there was an arahant who, even after having become an arahant, he was never able to receive any alms. Losakatissa. Venerable Losakatissa, because he had not given alms, or he had not given charity in either his previous births or in that birth, there were no merits to reward him with alms. So even when he used to go round with his alms bowl, people who used to come running with items of food would actually see that his alms bowl was full, when in fact it was empty. And so they thought, well, this monk clearly does not need any more food. And so they would refrain from putting those items in his bowl. And therefore he lived a life of hardship. He was hungry most of the time. And yet he was an arahant. So because he didn't have the merits to reward him with food, no matter how hard he tried, no matter how often he would go round for alms, he simply would come back with no food in his alms bowl. And it was very seldom that a fellow arahant would have this thought of, well, you know, I can't see Losakatis having any food, so perhaps I should just go and offer him something. And even that happened very seldom. And it is said that during the last few days, I believe it was Venerable Sariputta who looked into why Losakatis was so unfortunate and realized it was because he had not offered alms in the past, he had not been inclined to charity in the past, and therefore he had no good karma to reward him with alms. And he went round with his alms bowl to gather some food, but on his way back, unfortunately, he dropped the alms bowl, and even that food he was not able to offer Losakatissa. So that's the story behind that. In any case, the relevance of that story here is, well, when Venerable Sariputta goes round for alms, and his thoughts are to bring the alms that he collects and offers that to Venerable Losakatissa, then if you and I did that, that would be a meritorious deed. But to Venerable Sariputta, it is not a meritorious deed. An arahant is referred to as someone who has put aside both meritorious and unmeritorious deeds. That is the point of this message. Punya papa pahinasya. Someone who has eradicated both ping and pao. Okay? Now, therefore, the two kind of thoughts that arise in an arahant are resultant thoughts. So these are the thoughts that helps him go round for alms, drink a glass of water, use the toilet, don robes, go to sleep. All those things that we and I do. And then there are the resultant thoughts. So there are the functional thoughts and the resultant thoughts. The resultant thoughts are the vipaka citta. So vipaka citta are those thoughts that help us see the world, hear the world, taste, smell, touch, and the thoughts that come into our head without us actually thinking about it. So there are obviously eye consciousness, chakku vijnana, ear consciousness, sota vijnana, consciousness associated with the nose, that is gana vijnana, consciousness associated with the tongue, jivha vijnana, consciousness associated with the body, kaya vijnana, and consciousness associated with the mind, which is mano vijnana. So these types of consciousness are resultant. They are vipakas. So when they arise in you and I, and when they arise in an arahant, they are exactly the same. So if there were two people sat next to each other, one an arahant and one that is not an arahant, and a prutakjana, perhaps let's say there are three people, an arahant, a trainee, so one that is not an arahant but he's on the noble path, say he's an anagami, and then you have a prutakjana, just a mundane worldly being. So three people, and you bring in front of them that is something that is covered, so you're not able to see what it is. All you see is a black box, And out of the box you take a you open the box and you take a rose, a flower that was that all three of them liked at one point in life. The mundane being still likes it, and when he sees the rose, he feels happy. He feels that it's a nice flower and something that he attaches himself to. The anagami person will still be able to see that as something that is that brings karma to his mind, desire into his mind. But yet the arahant will not have any thoughts around desire. Even if as a anagami person or as a pratakjana, which he once was, he liked that rose, but now he does not have those feelings. But the very moment, the very first moment when light hits the rose and then is reflected from the rose and goes through their eyes, their pupils, hits the retina, and that signal goes to their brain, and that signal goes, and that is then comprehended in the mind as a chakku vijnana, that vijnana is actually resultant and is identical for all three of these people. Identical in the sense that it's nothing other than chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppajjati chakku vijnana. There is an object, there is a rupa, there is the eye, and then there is the eye consciousness. The three of them coming together is chakku sampassa or chakku passa. Okay? Passa being contact. So when the three of them come into contact, then you get vedana or feeling that something has just happened. Remember, we're talking at that very, very first level. We're not talking about what happens after someone has seen the rose. It's like the moment when you have your eyes open and someone just flashes something in front of your eyes. So yes, of course, if it's a second, then there are billions of thought moments that pass. But in the very first few thoughts are not volitional. They're not deliberate. They're just thoughts that help you see the object. You're not looking at the object. You're just seeing the object. So it's that very first stage. Those are the resultant chittas. Now, to an arahant, to an anagami, and to a pratakjana or a mundane being, this is identical. What happens after this point is an arahant does not do karmas. He does not then have thoughts of, oh, let me look at this again, whereas the other two might do that. The other two want to continue to look at this rose. So, for instance, if you move the rose to a side while all three of them are sat there looking at it, if you moved it to a side, say you moved it to the left or right, an arahant is never going to turn his head to look at it again. But an anagami as well as a pratakjana might turn their eyes to look at it. The pratakjana will most certainly do that if that is something that he is attached to. I mean, there are objects which he may not be attached to, but let's assume that the rose is something that he does like. He's going to turn his head, and then the anagami might do the same. So, but an arahant would never do that, because he does not give any value to any object that exists outside. Okay, so it's at that point where you're now doing karma, you're doing deeds, you're doing karma through your mind, and after each thought moment you're generating karmic energy which is going to result in vipaka. So it's that vipaka again which is going to bring you back into samsara as another being. The thoughts that made you want to turn your head and look at an object, that's the kind of thought that brings you back into samsara. And it's because an arahant has eradicated desire, he never feels the need to look at an object. He'll see an object, but he's not going to look at an object. Certainly not with desire, or aversion, or delusion. Right? So, what happens when you look at the rose, and if you continue with that example, remember we talked about the models that are set within our minds. Those very few thought moments are vipakas, as we just explained. And you then see the rose, all three of these people have. Those are the vipaka, that's the vipaka consciousness, and you are even able to identify this as a rose. What a non-arahant does at that point is, as soon as this mental impression of a rose is created in their minds, remember they're all seeing a mental impression, because outside there is no rose. Outside is just apo tejo vayo patavi, and there's an object that is in front of a certain background. That background could be, and as you said, it's a black box. So you taken a rose from a black box and you're holding it in front of this black box. So all three of them are simply seeing red against black, and perhaps a stalk that is green against black. So you're seeing three colors: red, green and black. So there's no rose really. So where does the rose come from? The rose comes from Chakku Vinyana. And what happens after that? So Chakku Vinyana, that is the consciousness associated with the eyes, tells us that something's going on outside. Because now this being, all three of them, are seeing three different colors. There's clearly something's changed. Something's going on out there. And you're seeing the rose petals, you're seeing the stalk. You're just seeing the red, you're seeing green and you're seeing black. So clearly there's a distinction between those three colors, and you can see a border where there's a change in colors. Borders are simply a change in colors, right? Nothing else. And when we see that, the arahant, the anagami person and the prutakjana will comprehend this object in three different ways. Well, in two different ways at least. The arahant will just see color against color, unless he wishes to identify what this object is. If he wishes to identify what this object is, he takes this combination of red with green and then black, so clearly realizing that there are three different things that requires identification, and then he goes back in his memory and checks what are some of the things that agree with this kind of combination. And obviously all of this happens in a flash of a second. And in his memory there will be he'll know that this is a black box, because the black box was in front of him before the rose came out of the black box, having seen that it has four or six sides, and it's square like, it's a 3D form. It takes up space. Again, you know, this is how you identify a box. If you see a box and you're seeing it against another a wall, then all you're seeing is a change in colors, and you're seeing a border, and you're seeing that it's taking up space because your eyes can see 3D, and then all of those inputs are dropped into your Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, and out comes the result. It's a box. It's a black box. It's a black box that is stood against a certain background. So the same thing happens when the arahant sees this rose. And when he does that, remember, an arahant does not have upadanita nama rupa. There are no grasping aggregates. He doesn't grasp. He doesn't cling on to any of these aggregates. But just the same as you and I can go shopping, and we'll see all of these items that are laid out in the supermarket, and yet we come home not having bought all of these items, only just the ones that we want. An arahant is able to go into the supermarket and just observe what's there. So an arahant still has the supermarket. This supermarket is full of the items that he would have bought in the past, and they're just laid out, but he does not care one bit about any of these items. So he'll have rupas, he'll have vedana, he'll have sanya, he'll have sankara, and he'll have vijnana. Because without that, you wouldn't be able to live in this world. You wouldn't be able to survive one moment. You know, you wouldn't breathe. You wouldn't identify yourself. You wouldn't recognize yourself. Because an arahant has to see his hand and know that it's his hand. How does he do that? It's because he has Rupa Vedana. He has not removed himself from Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, the five aggregates. All he's done is stopped clinging on to them. That's the difference. Hope that's making sense. So likewise, when he sees the difference in color, the Arahant then scans that mental impression, and he sends those inputs through the five aggregates, and then the result comes out. It's a flower, but he only does that if he wants to do that. And at that point, it's a functional thought that's doing it. It's not a karma, remember. It's a functional thought, so it's not going to generate any energy. And he can do that if he wants to, because otherwise he can just see it as color against color. He won't actually see the rose there if he doesn't want to. Imagine that. You don't see what's there. Well, you only see it as it is. You don't then process it. So he's not processing it unless he wants to. You know, imagine if you wrote a computer program and you had a camera, and the camera is facing a certain object. You switch the camera on and you ask the computer the question, what is that object? The computer is not even going to understand what the question is, let alone understand or recognize what the object is, because you haven't programmed it to do that, right? Imagine, you know, think of a CCTV system. Some CCTV systems will alert you when it detects that there's a human being that's come into the picture, so that it doesn't alert you when it's your pet cat that's jumping around in the garden. But if it's a human being, then it fires off an alarm. So how does it do that? Well, it's got to have a way to distinguish between an animal and a human being, right? So the way it would do that is if you program it to do that. So every image that comes in, every frame that comes into the computer through the camera, it needs to analyze it. It needs to break it up into its constituent parts, look at its hard disk and the data that exists in that hard disk, and check that if what is captured within that frame fits the description of a human being. And if it does, it alerts you, oh, there's a human being. So an Arahant is just the same. He'll only do it if he wants to. That is, if the computer is switched on and the computer has been programmed to do that. Whereas for you and I, that happens automatically, because we are clinging on to the aggregates. And whilst it happens in the same way, we have no way of controlling that reaction. Okay? So an Arahant is now looking at this as at this difference in color, and he has made a choice to identify this object, and it comes back with the result, this is a rose in front of a box. He stops there. The Arahant does not proceed from there on. There is no action that happens after that. So remember, an Arahant could have done it two different ways. One, he could have stopped at its color, that's it. Three different colors, that's it. Or he could have stopped at it's a rose behind a black box, or in front of a black box. He can stop there. The Anagami person, or anyone else other than an Arahant, is going to see it's a rose behind a black box, yes, or in front of a black box, and then they're going to attach themselves to it, or they're going to either have desire or aversion towards it. So say there's a person that simply does not like roses, or they only like white roses. Perhaps they have bad memories of red roses, maybe times when things have not quite worked out when a red rose came into the picture. And so therefore, when they see a red rose, they don't have feelings of happiness. They have feelings of anger, disappointment and frustration that come into their mind. And that's... So as soon as he sees the red rose, which is where the Arahant stopped, this person then goes into that models. He now has those models inside his mind, and those models come outside. And now those models are being impregnated with these mental impressions. So those mental impressions are now falling against those models and are being compared against the five sights in that model, the Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, because all of those are expectations. So these expectations are being scanned with that mental impression. This is where the problem happens. Because until then, you're not attaching yourself to something and you're not fighting against it either. There's no desire, as long as there's no desire and there's no aversion, which is another way of saying I have a preference with my models, he's not going to attach to it and he's not going to have a problem with it either. He's just going to let it be as it is, which is exactly what the Arahant is doing. But for someone that's not an Arahant, they go that one step further, which is to bring those models into the picture. So an Arahant is someone who has completely eradicated this business of modeling. So he's no longer a modeler. He doesn't create models. All he does is, as a result of what he's seeing right now, he goes back into his memory and he scans his memory against what the picture he's just looking at, and out comes a result, that's a rose that stood against the black box. That he comes to that conclusion if he wants to. Even that is a volitional choice. But for us, it's not a choice. It happens instantaneously. It's as if the floodgates have been opened. You can't stop the water. The water is just gushing and you can't stop it. Whereas an Arahant has mastered the art of closing the doors when he wants to. We can't do that. Our doors are just open 24/7. Stuff just goes in and out all the time. An Arahant, that does not happen. So you've seen the rose and you're now having thoughts of, you know, your models have come out now. All this happens in a flash of a second. Your models have come out now and now you're scanning the object out there with your models. Your model says, the flower that I like are dandelions, not roses. I don't like roses. Now you're not feeling happy. You're not having good thoughts. You're having thoughts of anger, frustration, disappointment. You know, think of the time when perhaps you've gone shopping for flowers. You've gone to the florist and you've asked him to bring you some red roses, and he comes out with dandelions. Or perhaps you've asked for the latter and he's coming out with red roses. At that moment, you're going to be annoyed. That's not what I asked for. Why? Because you had that expectation. So, whereas if someone else had ordered it, someone else had ordered red roses, and this guy is bringing out red roses, he's immediately going to think, well, that was for me. You know, can you remember a time when perhaps you've been in a restaurant and you've asked for spaghetti? Let's say you've asked for spaghetti, but you don't know that the guy next at the next table has also asked for spaghetti. You've also asked for, another dish. Let's say you asked for noodles. So you asked for noodles and you asked for spaghetti, or maybe say rice and spaghetti. And the waiter comes out with a plate in his hands, and on this plate you have spaghetti. When he brings his plate out, you're thinking that is for you, but actually this guy is bringing spaghetti for the guy that sat at the next table, and he's only asked for rice. So he's got the order wrong. He's bringing this food for the guy that sat at the next table who's asked for rice. You asked for spaghetti and he's bringing out this dish. And then immediately you're going to think, ah, that's for me. But this guy knows that it's for him. And he's going to be angry now because that's not what he asked for. But you're going to be happy. You're going to be thinking, oh, that's great. You brought what I asked for and you've come even before much earlier than I expected you to come. Because you actually came after the guy that's behind you at the restaurant. And because he's bringing spaghetti, you're thinking that's for you. So you're going to have attachment to this, whereas the guy that's sat behind you is going to feel angry and frustrated and annoyed because he asked for rice and what they're bringing is spaghetti. So the point being made here is, it's not what the waiter's bringing that is the problem. It's because your model says, I want something else. The guy next, the guy at the table behind you also has a model. And each of these models just does not fit with what happens outside in the world. And when it doesn't fit, anger, frustration, and disappointment. When it does fit, happiness and satisfaction. That's what happens. Now, there's also something else we should try to understand here. This can be very subtle, so I'll try and explain it as simply as I can. And perhaps if it's not clear, then please post any questions you might have. I'll use an example here where, say for instance, you've got two objects in front of you. And these two objects are a chair and a stool. They're both made of plastic. They're both made of exactly the same kind of plastic. Okay? Now, when you're looking at these two objects, you identify one as being a chair and you identify the other as being a stool. You identify that they're both plastic and they have a color. Okay? And what I want you to try and think is, where does this concept of object one is a chair and object two is a stool come from? Because out in the world, all you have is rupa, is apo tejo vayo patavi varna gandha rasa oja, the pure octet. That's all that exists outside in the world. So where does this impression of a chair and a stool come from? Because if all our eyes can see are apo tejo vayo patavi, let's keep it to just those four to keep it simple. So that's the fire element, the earth element, the water element, and the air element, the heat element. Sorry. Then where do we get this concept, or how do we recognize that object A as a chair and object B as a stool? Well, here's how that happens. Out in the world is just the order in which the apo tejo vayo patavi exists at that point in time. And in fact, if you took the chair and you recycled the plastic, you could actually make the stool out of that with exactly the same amount of plastic. And if you broke the stool down, you could make the chair again. If you recycle the chair again, you could go back to the stool. You could keep doing that any number of times you want. Obviously, there's going to be wastage and all that, but let's ignore that for now. Okay? The amount of element, plastic, in both those objects are exactly the same. And assuming we could use a process that is 100% efficient, you could each time melt the chair down into the plastic and make the stool, and do vice versa as well. So actually, out there is just apo tejo vayo patavi. So where does this concept of a chair and a stool come from? So what we need to think about is, imagine there were two people. One does not know what a chair is. He does not identify a stool, either of these objects. And then there's a second person that knows a chair when he sees one, and he knows a stool when he sees one. So two people looking at these two objects. One does not know what that is. Okay? The first person that does not identify these objects, and it's the first time he's seen it, will not have a preconceived idea of this is what a chair or a stool should look like. Or at least he's not going to know that, oh, there are two objects in this world that look different in this way. He will not realize that there's an object in this world that looks the shape of a chair. And he won't know what a chair is to begin with. He won't know what a stool is to begin with. Because those though sanya does not exist in his mind. But if it's the first time he's seeing those two objects, then that creates a mental impression. This is why the second time you show him the same object, he's going to expect the first object that he saw. But he's still not going to be able to identify that as a chair. You ask him, what is that? I don't know, but I've seen it before, is what he's going to say if you show it to him the second time. Whereas the person that identifies a chair, if you ask him the first time, what is this? He's going to say, it's a chair. Imagine you broke one of the legs and you showed him, what is this? He's still going to say, well, it's a chair, but it's broken. Right? Whereas the first person is going to say, I don't know what that is. I've seen it before. But if you showed him the chair that had a broken leg for the first time, he's still going to say, I have no idea what that is. But you tell him that is a, you bring the object back again and reattach the leg, and then you show him the chair, he's going to say, I don't know what that is, but it looks similar to something I've seen in the past. Except it's got this extra bit to the side. I don't know what that is either. Because he doesn't identify a chair. Now, where does this extra bit, as well as the fact that this chair comes from? It's from those mental impressions that they have had. Now, remember I said, it's just apo tejo vayo patavi that exists there. Which is why you can melt one combination of apo tejo vayo patavi and you can create another combination of apo tejo vayo patavi. This is the only reason why when you have... So I remember as a boy, when we had long trousers, and certainly my dad said he used to do that when they were young. After a while, they used to use it when you couldn't wear your trousers outside, as in they're worn to some extent. What his mother would do would actually chop the legs off and then make it a pair of short pants that he could wear at home. So it was a set of trousers before that, and now it's a pair of pants. Okay? So likewise, one day you see a towel, the next day it becomes something else. It becomes a... if I took another example, one day you see a bit of cloth that is used as a tablecloth, the next day it's used as material for handkerchief. The reason we can do that is because the tablecloth is not permanent. It's not, you know, people, although we give labels to these objects, this is a tablecloth, nobody's going to stop us from using it as something else, are they? No, if I wanted to use a tablecloth as a bedsheet, could I not do that? I could do that. In fact, if I wanted to use a mobile phone as a prop to steady my chair, could I not do that if I wanted to? Of course I could do that. I mean, it would be an expensive way of doing it, but I could still do it. So the point here being, although we identify objects in the world as a particular kind of object, because the world, you know, we have sanya about objects out there, they're not final. We can change them. We can change them to be used in the way that we like. Let's take a mat, for example. A mat or a rug. If there was a rug that was big enough or large enough, could one not use that as a sarong if they really wanted to? Of course they could. Or if there was a towel, could one not use it as an item of clothing if they wanted to? Of course, yes. When you bought that object from the store, you obviously went and asked, "Can I buy a towel?" And they gave you a towel. Yes, no question about that. But no one's going to stop you from using it for whatever else you want to use it. The reason for that is because those objects for which you use, or the reasons you use that object for, only exist in your mind. That does not exist. It's not part of the object. So this is why, I don't know if you guys have done it as young kids, When I was younger, we used to play with old wheels or the rims of a bicycle. So when we bought a bicycle, at first the two wheels are what moves the bicycle. The two wheels are part of the bicycle. But when the bicycle is old and you've got to throw it away, what we do is we remove the wheels and then we give them away to the young kids who play with a stick, and they just push the wheel, or just they remove the rubber tire from around it, and you just have the rim, and with a stick you push the rim along the slope, and they have a lot of fun with that. So it's gone from being a tire or a wheel for a bicycle to a toy for a kid. Okay, same object but different use. This is because when I look at a wheel of a bicycle, I'm thinking that's the wheel of a bicycle. When a young kid looks at the wheel of a bicycle, he's thinking that's a toy that I can use to play with a stick. So why two different sanya? Why two different ways of identifying that object? It's because this is what we need to think. You know, does the wheel exist in out there in the world? Does the toy rim exist out in the world? Does a handkerchief exist out in the world? Does the tablecloth exist out in the world? How about a towel? Does that exist out in the world? Or a chair or a stool? Or are they concepts that are created in our mind? Because when I tell you the word tablecloth, as soon as I say the word tablecloth, there's a tablecloth that comes into your mind. When I say the word towel, there's a towel that comes into your mind. Now when I, and the next moment, if I bring you an object, and if it's a, so I've said the word towel, and I bring a towel in front of you, what you do is you scan the apotejo vayopativi that's outside you, outside in the world, the things that you can see with your eyes, and you check that against this mental image that you have of a towel. And if it fits, then you're going to say, that is a towel. But if I brought a different kind of object, say I brought a handkerchief, you're going to scan that and you're going to compare that with your mental impression of the towel, and you're going to say, that's not a towel. But if I wanted to, I could use it as a towel, could I not? I could. Some people do. And the reason for this is because out in the world, all there exists is apo tejo vayo patavi and various combinations of that. We create things over and above apo tejo vayo patavi in our minds, and it's like a mental impression that we project onto the world. So when you see apo tejo vayo patavi in a way that in a certain way, when your eyes can perceive that in a certain way, you give it the label towel. You give it the label handkerchief. But in reality, that did not exist out there. All that existed out there was apotejo vayopativi. Which is why, you know, you can recycle things. Because if you couldn't, you wouldn't be able to recycle things. I mean, how can a towel become a handkerchief? Or how can a handkerchief become a towel if that was fixed? If that was a towel, you couldn't change it. But the reason you can change it is because out there is just apo tejo vayo patavi. And apo tejo vayo patavi is what goes into everything. This is why we can recycle a plastic bottle and make a chair out of it. Why? Because the plastic bottle is not something that is fixed. The chair is not something that is fixed and permanent. They can change depending on how we want to change it. And then given any combination of apo tejo vayo patavi, What it does is, because we have this mental impression that we cast out into the world, we then set the borders for things. Now, let's take a really simple example. White wall. Against this white wall, I hang a picture. Okay, so you have a picture that's hung on a white wall. Now, who says your border for the first object or the picture is the border of the picture that is actually out there? So who says that's where you've got to set your borders? I didn't say that. Do you understand what I mean? You've got the white wall. On the white wall is hung a picture, a framed picture. Okay. Now, how is it that you recognize that there's a framed picture in front of the white wall? Yes, there was difference in color. Okay. But let's say the white wall has another border. So you have the large white wall. Within that, you have another a square. Say that's yellow in color. So white wall, and in that on that white wall is a square that is yellow, and within that square you have this picture frame. Now, so you have three changes in color: white to yellow to that of the picture, and the picture frame is black. So black, yellow, white. Okay, as it goes outside and then coming in, it's white, yellow, and black. Right. You're going to look at that and go, there's a white wall, on that white wall is a square that is yellow, and within that square is a black picture frame. Where did you get the instruction to draw your borders exactly there? I didn't give you that instruction. That instruction you took on yourself. You took that on yourself because you're looking at that. And the apotejo vayo patavi is all that is there, right? The wall and the picture frame are all apotejo vayo patavi. The yellow bit is also that. It's just got a different varna. But it's all apotejo vayo patavi. What's going on there is you're seeing the picture frame and you're thinking, because you have in your mind the concept of a picture frame, when you see that combination of apotejo vayo patavi, a picture frame, the model for a picture frame comes into your mind, and then you project that frame outside into the world. So this is not like you're emitting light from your eyes. That's not what's going on. You set the border for that picture frame. This is how you can identify that there's a framed picture in front of me. Let's take another example. Let's say your mother. I ask you to be sat in a room. I ask your mother to come into the room. She walks into the room. You say hello. And then I ask her to walk out of the room. I do that a second time. You say hello. And then I ask her to leave the room. The third time, without you knowing, I actually have built a robot that looks exactly like your mother. She is dressed like you, exactly like your mother. She can also mimic the movements of your mother. But it's a robot. It's just metal, wires, and some batteries inside it. Okay? Now, the third time I bring this robot, and you're not able to tell that it's your mother, it's a robot. You're thinking this is your mother, right? As soon as this robot comes in, I pick up a knife and I stab this robot. How are you going to feel? You're going to be infuriated. You're going to feel angry. You're going to feel sad, and you're going to be in shock. Why have you just killed my mother? Is the question you're going to ask. Why did you just stab my mother? When actually it's not your mother. It's just a robot. It's just metal, some wires, and some batteries. But what happened was, you cast a mental impression or a mental projection of what you thought is your mother onto this robot. Because the robot was exactly the same size as your mother, it was dressed just like your mother from you having seen the mother a few moments ago, and because it can mimic the movements of your mother, so it's mimicking the Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. Because it's mimicking those five things, when you see this robot, you have just cast this projection that as soon as, because again, the robot and your mother, what are they made of? Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi. So there's no difference there. It's just two lots of Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi. So the point here being, if we can cast Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi in a certain way, what our mind is able to do is to perceive what our eyes can perceive, because our eyes can only perceive color, right? That's all our eyes can perceive. When our eyes perceive color, and when our ears perceive sound, well, let's leave sound for a moment. When our eyes perceive color, because your mother is not talking to you, all you're doing is saying hello to the mother. Your mother is not making any noise, she's not talking to you, she's not doing anything. She didn't do the first two times. So the robot is not doing that either, okay? So the only way you are recognizing this is your mother is not through sound. It's only through what you're looking, through your eyes, okay? The third time you see the robot, as soon as your eyes are perceiving color, the Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi is now cast in a certain way that it brings out this model of a mother inside your mind. Does it not? Yes. And that model of a mother, you project onto the Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi, which in this case is actually just a robot. This is why when I stab the robot, you're thinking I've just stabbed your mother, when actually I haven't stabbed your mother out there. But where have I stabbed your mother? Inside your mind. I have stabbed the mother that exists in your mind. I haven't stabbed the mother that's out there. Because out there is just Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi. This is why I said it's a really subtle concept to grasp. Take another example. Let's say cake, favorite topic. You're sat down around a table and the menu for dessert tonight is cake. So the waiter brings a cake. It has it's a chocolate cake, has a cherry on top of it, and when you're sat there and the cake has been brought and it's in front of you, you do know that that's just Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi. There's no question about that, right? It's just Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi. What happens in your mind is this Apo Tejo Vayu Patavi, the colors that you see through your eyes, and say this time you can also smell it. Okay, it's you can smell the cake. It's really close to you. You can smell the cake. This the smell, and this is how you're perceiving your world. The smell and the color that you're seeing out there brings out this model of a cake, that of a chocolate cake in your mind. But after having brought the cake out, the waiter says, "Oh, I'm sorry. That was not for you. That was somebody else. I'm really sorry. I'll bring what belongs to you or what you ordered." So this guy takes this cake away and he brings another cake. Actually, this cake looks identical to the first cake. So you're a bit confused. But the second cake is actually plastic. It's not a proper cake. It's plastic. But now you're having sat down there, Are you not ready to start slicing it up and putting it in your mouth? You are ready to do that because when you see the apotejo vayu patvi out there, and imagine this, let's assume that this plastic cake has the smell of the first cake that was brought there. So for all you know, it's exactly another cake, and it was exactly the same kind of cake that came there in the first place. So this is why you're asking yourself, why take that away and bring me a cake that is exactly the same? So it looks the same and it smells the same, but that smell has just been put inside it, you know, to fool you. Okay, are you now not ready to pick the knife up and to slice it up and start eating it straight away? Yes, but could you ever do that to this cake? No. Why? Because it's plastic. But fundamentally, it's apotejo vayu patri, the same as the first cake was. But this cake, you can't eat. But what does your mind say? Let's get at it. Let's slice it up. Let's shave it round and let's start eating already. Now, if someone came in there, as you are going to slice it, and someone, and the waiter comes back again a second time and says, "Oh, I'm really sorry, sir. Please don't. That's the wrong cake. You can't eat that." He's not telling you why he can't eat that. He was going to say, because it's plastic, you can't eat it. He was going to say, "Oh, that's actually the model that was outside the shop, on the shop window. And, you know, some we have a new waiter. He's a bit mad. This is why he's brought this cake." But before you let him say all that, you are now furious. You're saying, because in your mind you just want to go have a go at this cake, you know, because the second time it's been brought in front of you. The first time was bad enough, taken away. Now coming back a second time to take this away. You don't let him say why you can't cut the cake up. And you say, "No, I am not going to let you take that cake." And he says, "No, I'm really sorry, you can't eat that cake." And he actually takes it by force and takes it away. Now you go mad with anger. Is that because the plastic cake was taken away from you? Or the cake in your mind was taken away from you? It's because the cake in your mind was taken away from you. Because if you knew that in front of you was actually a plastic cake, you wouldn't have any problem with the waiter taking that away, would you? No. But that is what it actually is. It's a plastic cake. You're never in a million years going to be able to eat that. And if you, the moment you realize it's a plastic cake, you're not going to continue cutting it and slicing it. You're just going to stop. You're going to make a complaint, saying, "Take that away, and for the final time, make sure you bring me the right cake." But without you doing that, what you're doing is now you're really angry. Because the cake that's in your mind has just been taken away. The cake that you were all so ready and willing to eat. And in your mind, you've already had a part of it, had a piece of it, and it tastes delicious. It's chocolate cake, your favorite. You also had a go at the cherry as well, in your mind. Here's the funny thing. There's one cherry. There's 10 of you. Haven't all 10 of you tasted the cherry already? But only one of you is actually going to be able to have that cherry. But you've all tasted it already. But there's only one cherry on that cake. Because in your mind, you've already tasted the cake. You've already tasted the cherry. You know what it smells like, both the cherry and the cake. You know what it feels like when it's on your tongue. You know what it feels like when you're swallowing it. All of this, why? Because you have those models. And the model that you have in your mind, you've already eaten, because that's how those models were created in the first place. And you're ready to have a go at this cake. You're ready to just, you know, get cracking. But that cake was taken away. So it's not the cake that was out there that caused you disappointment when taken away. Because if you knew that it was plastic, you wouldn't have a problem at all. It's the cake that's in your mind that was taken away. That's where the problem came. So what happened is, when there was apotejo vayu patvi that was brought to you in the first place, that created a mental impression in your mind. And now you have an expectation of this is the cake that I'm going to eat. That apotejo vayo patavi was taken away. A second apotejo vayo patavi is brought in its place. Now you are ready to put that apotejo vayo patavi in your mouth. But that apotejo vayo patavi was taken away. That combination of apotejo vayo patavi, you're not going to be able to eat in a million years. The first you were angry with, or you know, you said, okay, that's fine, just bring me the right cake, and that wasn't a problem. But the second time, that was a huge problem. When actually, you shouldn't have had the problem with the second cake, because that was plastic. You couldn't have eaten it. So, what we need to realize is, what's happening is when you are seeing apotejo vayo patavi out there, as in the most basic elements of materials that exist out there, that creates a cake in your mind. And then what your mind does is, because it had the mental impression from the first time, your mind casts or projects a cake out there onto that object. Now imagine the second cake didn't have a cherry on it, but the first cake did. You never asked for a cake with cherry, but the first cake that came there had a cherry on it. Guess what's going to happen if a cake is brought without a cherry on it the second time? Yeah, you're going to be upset. Hang on, where's the cherry? You never asked for a cake with cherry, but because a cake was bought with a cherry on top, now your model has a cherry on top of it. So this is what you got to think. When that first cake was brought, that created a mental impression. That mental impression now you're projecting onto this second cake that was brought. And therefore that projection is, it's a cake, it's chocolate cake, and it's got to have a cherry on top of it. But it doesn't, and it's not cake, and it's plastic, and you can't eat it. This is why when that got taken away, you're disappointed. Now, if you think about this then, and kind of try to draw what's going on in your mind, we eat what we create in our minds, not what's out there. We see what we create in our minds, not what's actually going on out there. Remember, this is why I can see a stool and a chair, because ultimately it's just apotejo vayo patavi. But as long as I have a mental impression that I can project onto apotejo vayo patavi, onto a combination of apotejo vayo patavi, I'm able to tell that's a chair and that's a stool, because I'm projecting those images. Those images are being created in my mind, and therefore that image, I'm looking out there, I'm looking for something that that can fit with my mental image. That's what I'm doing. This is why when something does not exactly fit, or a part of it is faulty, or a part of it has fallen off, then you're disappointed, and you're feeling unhappy, because it doesn't agree with your mental image. Your projection does not fit with it. That's where the problem is. So what we're really doing is, then we are creating the world in our minds, and we are living that, are we not? We are eating the things that we create in our mind. We are seeing the things that we hear in our we see in our mind. We are hearing the things that we create in our mind. Remember, we talked about a song or a beat. You know, beat does not exist in the world. The world has just sound in, you know, just notes, single notes. But we create a song with that. We create a beat with that. We put rhythm to it. Because what the mind does, it collects all of those sound moments. It ties all of them up together like you're tying up a bundle of wood. Bundle of chop wood to take home after you've chopped, you know, for your fireplace, right? Similarly, your mind is taking sound moments and then tying them all up together, and then saying that's a beat, that's a song. So that song does not exist out there; it exists in your mind. This is, but the problem is, say someone sings the national anthem, right? Someone singing the national anthem, everyone knows the national anthem. And then one guy sings the wrong bit. Or one guy goes off rhythm or off beat. Now you have a problem with that. You have a problem with that not because the guy went off beat. It's because it's not the same as the national anthem or the song that exists in your mind. That's where the problem is. So what you're doing is when someone's singing a song, see, you're doing it even when someone's singing a song. You're projecting what's in your mind out to the world and expecting the world to give you what to fit exactly with your projection. Think of you as a projector. You know, you've seen a projector. When you're using a projector, your projector projects a screen, projects an image. Basically, it's just light, right, onto a background. And when it projects that image onto a background, imagine it's a picture of or it's an image of a man. So now you're just seeing like a silhouette, just a black on a background. Okay. Now when say there's a kid who likes to draw pictures, and you ask the kid, "Can you please draw me a picture of a man?" This kid brings a picture of a man, and you've now got this picture in front of you. Now you turn on your projector. The projector is projecting a picture of a man. So that, you know, what happens is when your projector projects that image of a man, and you're projecting it on top of the image, on top of the picture that the kid has drawn for you, if they fit exactly, what you're going to say? Oh, well, you've drawn a good picture of a man. But what if it doesn't fit? What if the picture that the kid drew had horns on top of the man's head? Now your projection does not agree with the picture that has been drawn. Therefore you say, that's not a man. Because what you're doing is, you're just seeing Apotejo Vayo Patavi out in the world, and you're projecting your image of what you think a man should be like, or a man should look like. You're projecting what cake should taste like, what cake should look like out into the world, and therefore saying, that's a cake, that's a man, that's a woman, that's a chair, that's a stool, and so forth. How are you doing that? Your projector has those images in its memory bank, and it's projecting out there, and therefore it's expecting those things to agree with the shape, same shape and the same form that exists in your mind. This is why when your mother came into the room, and it was the third time round, it was a robot. What you did was, you are now expecting mother, and you project your mother's image in your mind onto that robot, and they fit exactly, don't they? Why? It looks the same, clothes the same, same kind of hair, same makeup. Right? So it looks exactly the same. And now what are you thinking? That's my mother. This is why when someone stabbed the robot, you're feeling angry. You're feeling sad. Well, no one stabbed your mother. But they did stab the mother that exists in your mind. Because you cast that projection out into the world, onto that Apotejo Vayo Patavi, which was just a robot. And now you're asking the question, why did you stab my mother? Well, no one stabbed your mother. This is why you're asking the waiter, why are you taking that chocolate cake away, when he's not taking away the chocolate cake. But what happened was, all you saw was Apotejo Vayo Patavi, and what did you do? You projected the image of a cake on top of it, and guess what happened? It fit exactly. The image that you projected fit exactly with the combination of Apotejo Vayo Patavi that existed out in the world. This is what happens, because if they didn't fit, then you wouldn't be thinking that's your mother. Oh, sorry, the cake. So if say the third time you brought the robot in, and you're projecting the image of your mother, and say that robot had a third arm, whereas your mother only has two. This robot has a third arm. At that point you're going to say, that's not my mother. How are you saying that? It's because you're projecting an image, and the image does not fit with the combination of Apotejo Vayo, the layout of Apotejo Vayo Patavi that you're seeing right now. So you can say, you can do whatever the hell you like with that robot. I don't care, it's not my mother. But as soon as we remove the third arm, say you looked away, I removed the third arm, and you look back again. Oh, the robot was taken out and mother was brought back into the room. Oh, right, hey mom. Because you're thinking we removed the robot and we brought mother in, but all we did was remove the third arm when you looked away. With me? And now, because the layout of apotejo vayu patavi fit exactly with your projection, you're thinking that's your mother out there. And now if I stab that robot again you're gonna feel sad. So guess who else does this? Guess who create a world within their minds and live in that world? People in a mental asylum. Patients in a mental asylum do this. They create a world in their minds, and as we've discussed before, they think, I'm the king. And these are my servants. These are my ministers. What they're doing is they have these mental images in their minds, and now they're casting them out. And they're thinking, oh, look at all the gold that I'm wearing. When obviously, you know, you and I go there and we can't see any gold there. Look at this, these robes that I'm wearing. You know, they're very expensive. They're adorned with diamonds. We can't see any diamonds. But what are they doing? They're just seeing apotejo vayu patavi, and they're projecting their mental image onto it. And to them, it fits. It fits because they've gone mad. So they're seeing a world that we can't see, but by using the same apotejo vayu patavi. Now, if we call them mental patients, well then, if we are seeing things that don't exist out in the world by projecting what's in our mind onto those things, well then, guess, are we any different? This is what we've got to think. So where is the chair? Where is the stool? Where is the chocolate cake? And where is my mother? Aren't they just apotejo vayu patavi? If I wanted to, and if I had the technological means to do what I wanted to, could I not break the chair up into its most basic elements and create a handkerchief? Now, technology may not be that advanced today, but perhaps in another 100 years' time, we might be there. Any object can be transformed into anything else. It's just a case of science hasn't caught up with that yet. But, you know, back in the day when there were arahants, and they were able to control the elements by having developed their minds to that level, you were able to create things. How? By transforming one object into another. By manipulating the fire element, the water element, the heat element, the air element, and the earth element. So if when you have the power to manipulate objects and change their form in that way, you can create anything from anything. Science hasn't caught up with that yet. Because to an arahant, this is what I say, to an arahant, this is apotejo vayu patavi. Where you set the border is very subjective. One person sets the border in one place, the other sets the border somewhere else. And because we're all projecting these mental images, we're seeing as if the world that exists in our mind exists out in the world. When actually the world actually exists in our mind. But we keep projecting these mental images. We keep projecting the sounds, the sights, the tastes, and we think, oh, the world exists. All that's happening is, we've got a world in our minds. And we're projecting that out. And because the apotejo vayu patavi fits exactly with those mental impressions that are being projected, we are saying, outside in the world, my mind, what's in my mind also exists. And this is why the things that we are attached to in our mind, we go looking for out in the world. Because we are thinking, those objects exist out there. And then the same tastes should exist out there. The same smells should exist out there. And then we go looking for it. So when Venerable Sariputta says, avidya samudaya rupa samudaya, what he's talking about is, because we are under delusion, because we have ignorance, the rupas, the mental formations are created in our mind through avidya. Now, is it not evident that it is because of avidya we do this? When an arahant doesn't do that, an arahant just sees apo tejo vayo patavi. And if he wants to, clearly he can go back in his memory and put form around these objects. But to us, we see this as a chair. I have no choice but to see this as a chair. I could never see this as anything else unless I become an arahant. At that point, I have the ability to view an object in a different way if I wanted to. This is why an arahant looks at a log and says, well, Lord Buddha, Venerable Sir, I can see this log, I can just see the apo in this log. I can just see the tejo, I can just look at it and go, that's just vayu, that's just patavi. But to you and I, we look at a log and all there is a log. Because we're not seeing things as they are. So when he says, avidya samudaya, rupa samudaya, well, clearly. Then he says, tanha samudaya, rupa samudaya. So in English, that's through ignorance arises form. This is the form that he's talking about in the mind. Remember? Form that arises in the mind. Because that's the kind of form that can be eradicated by eradicating avidya. By eradicating avidya, I can't eradicate this chair. I mean, that makes sense, right? I can't eradicate this world that I'm looking through my eyes by eradicating... I can't remove this, I can't destroy the world out there, outside me, by eradicating ignorance and attachment inside me. But the matter that I can eradicate inside me are the mental impressions that come into my mind. But that can be eradicated, or that can be removed by eradicating avidya, ignorance. And then karma samudaya, rupa samudaya. Well, obviously, karma is when you do things. Mano karma, vachi karma, kaya karma. So how did this, and an arahant, as we said at the beginning, does not do karma. But you and I, we do karma. This is how those mental images are created in our mind. Those rupa are created through karma. Tanha samudaya karma tanha samudaya rupa samudaya. Well, yes, of course. It's because we have attachment to this, to the rupa that we are looking at, to the apo tejo paya patavi that we are looking at. Those forms are created in our own minds. And then ahara samudaya rupa samudaya, or where there's food for that form, that form is created in our mind. Now where is the food? The food is out there, out in the world. This combination of apo tejo vayo patavi is sufficient food for the impression of a chair to be created in my mind. And then that chair I'm projecting out into the world. And then finally nibbati lakkanang rupa samudaya. So nibbati lakkanang is the quality of being produced. In other words, it's the paticca-samuppada process. It's the dependent origination process. When the dependent origination process continues to exist, and why does the dependent origination process exist? Because of avidya. Avidya and tanha. As long as ignorance and attachment exists, the dependent origination process is in play. Right? So this is where he says, Nibbati lakkanang rupa samudaya, and in other words, as long as the paticca samuppada, the dependent origination process continues, the form is going to be created, rupa are going to be created. Where? Not out in the world there. Yes, it applies to objects in the world as well, but that's not what we are worried about. It's the objects that are created in our mind that give us problems, not these objects out here. So when an arahant passes away, he does not, the world doesn't go out with him. You know, the world doesn't stop, the world is still rotating. And the sun rises, the sun sets, the oceans still have waves, the stars still shine. All of those things happen. The wind still blows. But in his mind, There are no waves. There are no oceans. There's no sunrise or sunset. Why? Because he has removed all kinds of rupa at that point forward. Why? Because there's no avidya, no ignorance, no attachment, no tanha, no karma, right? No actions being done, no ahara. You know, because his senses are now completely off. There are no apotejo vaya part of impressions that are being taken inside. Okay? And there is no nibbati lakana. There is no paricchasamuppada process. So that's how an arahant has eradicated all kinds of rupa. Not rupa out there, rupa inside the mind. So that was quite a complex bit of philosophy. I didn't think of talking about that, but it's just ideas started to flow, and I can see how that whole thing fits together now. And this is why I encourage people who have an understanding of the Dhamma to engage in conversation with someone who's similar, and someone who has a genuine interest, and someone who understands the basic principles of the Dhamma. Because when you do that, it gets you to think, and it gets that is the nature of Dhamma. When you open the floodgates, then things just start come flooding in. You know, the Dhammas just start flooding in. And having done this sermon, I now can see what Venerable Sariputta explained when he said avidya samudaya, rupa samudaya, something that I didn't think about before I started speaking. So perhaps it's a good fortune for all of us to have done that. And I invite you all to listen to this sermon again, because I appreciate that some of those concepts might have been quite complex. Repeatedly listen to it a few times until you've understood it fully. If you have any questions, and I would most welcome those questions, then please send them to us either via email or through Skype, and we can try and capture some of those perhaps in the next program. And I hope that today's program may have been useful to some of you at least. May the merits that we have all acquired by listening to this Dhamma sermon, as well as preaching this sermon, help us all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May those beings that we invited at the start of this sermon rejoice in those merits, the Devas, the Brahmas, as well as any distant past beings that who have been our relations in this infinitely long time in Sansara. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired. If any of them are born in the woeful plains, may the merits help them be born in the blissful plains. And having done so, may they be able to listen to the Dhamma, to understand the Dhamma, and cross the ocean of samsara to put a stop to this endless process of rebirth, which brings forth an endless amount of suffering. May all beings attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana in the era of Gautama Samma Sambuddha itself. May all beings enjoy the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Therwan Sarnai.